Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan, here, as always, with producer Mike and intern assistant producer Frankie, who made his show debut last
week.
That's
right. I did actually creep over to the comments and see a few people mentioning that they were happy to see him in there. He's in the doghouse, so to speak, a little bit today because he almost ate half an Oreo off the street on First Avenue. And that was a moment of panic.
But you're doing, I think, what I do, maybe a little bit, what my mom did. Don't know if your mom did, but whenever you feel an insecurity or a fear about your child, you quickly pivot to, what the fuck, what are you doing?
Oh,
how
yes.
could you do that?
Did my mom do it? Oh, yeah. Do I do it? Oh, yeah.
My favorite. All right, Kool-Aid man.
You have no idea how many times I scream at Frankie on the street. Why did you do that?
Yeah. I've always said my mom was a great mom, and she was never going to let her kids get in the way of that.
Right.
But I have, we'll talk some fun stuff first. I was at the Ranger game last night.
Enjoy it while it lasts, folks.
Yeah. You're getting stage four JL this episode. I went to the Ranger game. It's my fourth game I've seen this season, and I keep buying more tickets. At this point, I want to ask my season ticket guy, like, can I just go to the full seat? Like, how much more at this point to just upgrade?
Oh, because you're
a full
adding
season?
On. You have your package.
Season opener was an add-on. Yeah. The Chris Kreider return game on the 15th was an add-on.
Oh, God, great.
And I like Chris Kreider.
You got the jersey, yeah, of course. And then
last night was the birth of a franchise. They're doing these. It's where W.D. Griffiths comes out and shows the first Ranger team in Klan outfits. That's a deep cut for all my fans. Thank you, Mike.
D.W. Griffiths, but yes.
What did I say?
W.D. Griffiths. Yeah.
To his friends, he was W.D.
Yeah, right. White Devil Griffith.
No, it was really fun, and of course they lost. Just to cut to the chase, they're 0-4 when I'm in attendance so far. Yep. 0-1 preseason, 0-3 regular season. One goal in four home games. Four home games, they have scored one goal.
Yeah, I'm sure they're thrilled that you keep buying the add-ons.
It's literally like they're going to start like being like there is a it's like The Conjuring or something. Yeah. So they're going to need like some.
They go, is the money worth it?
Some spiritual guides to walk in and go, we're sensing a Section 120 disturbance. But they did this whole theme night, and you get like a commemorative ticket that you're nice, and they were handing out like fake newspapers about like the birth of the team, and each like break they'd have like grandkids of like original stars of the Rangers like getting like personalized jerseys. It was really cool. And so on November 16th, which is not a game, I have five of the games included in my plan. So I just added the sixth, and now it's a question of, do I do all eight like a weird collector loser, which I'm becoming. But it was so fun last night. Like, and of course the only problem was they lost.
Wow.
They lost. So I don't know what's happening. Obviously last year I bought a quarter season plan. I jokingly said in the beginning of the year, I wonder what will happen this year when I buy a half season plan. Last year they went from the best record in the league. I bought a quarter season plan. They missed the playoffs. That's a steep drop in one season.
Yes.
This year I bought a half season plan. They've scored one goal in four home games. It feels like at some point they're going to pay me not to buy full season tickets next year. It's like Madison Square Garden caved in today. It's one of the worst things we've seen. One survivor, a J.L. Covan, who can live with the guilt of what he's done. But yeah, I'm hoping they turn around. We got the San Jose Sharks. I guess when this episode comes out on Thursday, I'll be at the San Jose Sharks game, and they are one of like the two or three worst teams in the league. So, but they do have like a stud, like number one center. He's like 19. He was like first overall pick. And so, you know, wouldn't be surprised. Rangers scored two goals, but Macklin Celebrini had a hat trick.
Yeah.
He's arrived.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But the Rangers, it's still just fun to go to. We had a great row. Obviously my seats are my seats, and, everybody was different than the time we went. So I think those are just seats that are game, but really nice people, really well-behaved row. I had a young couple next to me again.
But they didn't scream, "Let's go Rangers."
Totally normal. Yeah. Just totally like clapped. Not never heard. I don't know what their voices sounded like.
That's those are the best aren't neighbors at a sports or sporting event.
Aren't they great? That's and but great. There's no other season ticket people around us because last year we'd see the same people every game and they were just like, it's nice. You had like a bubble of like quality people around you. Mm. So we'll see. But it's not shaping up too great for the Rangers JL experience season two. So I've got shows coming up. By the time you listen to this, I will have already performed in Philadelphia. So hopefully my 9 to 12 requests for you to buy tickets worked. Probably didn't, though. Probably didn't.
We'll see.
You know, Gianmarco, who I touted his special a couple of weeks ago.
Selling out.
He's all at 9 shows at this club. Now he's become very big. Mm-hmm. He has not been shadow banned by any social media sites. His fans seem to like live comedy. Mm-hmm. These are all very important things when you're building a career in comedy.
I know you're going to get insulted by this question, and it's going to seem like a dumb question. Do you post crowd work clips?
You'll know when I post crowd work clips because it will be me committing seppuku in public for shaming the art and my family.
So I'm wondering.
That will be my one crowd. I've posted like a couple crowd work clips only because they were good.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and I think I even put them maybe on Patreon. I was like, guys, this is a secret. Okay. Yeah. I don't want people to see me doing this.
I'm wondering because I know I think Gianmarco is fun, very fun. I said the same thing when you talked about him last time. I always liked him. I do know that he was posting a lot of those crowd work clips.
Oh, he does.
I'm wondering if that is like a direct.
It might be, but at this point, like, I feel like
people know that if they show up. Oh, I'm not saying that that you should do that because I never thought that that's something that you like wanted to do, really. But I do wonder, like everything that we always talk about with like, why don't people come out to shows? It's just me posting like my work, my jokes, the things that I worked hard on. It's like, I don't know, maybe they do want to be like, oh, this guy does a lot of crowd work.
Well, I had a fan, I remember in Pittsburgh, and I had, of course, people I posted, I'm going to be in Philadelphia. And once again, every comment, not one comment had to do with Philadelphia and coming to the show. Everything was like,
I live in Cincinnati.
Come to Pittsburgh. And I was like, I did 3 years in a row. My ticket sales were awful.
Right.
Truly awful.
Right. Where were you then?
Like to the point where I was like, I remember getting a check for $39, like after the venue took their City Winery takes a pretty like solid chunk up top. So if you're going to sell a lot, great. If you're not going to when I got my $39 check from City Winery and did the math on the train trip to Pennsylvania, to Pittsburgh, the hotel, and I almost wanted to just rip it up and go, what's this for? but it's like, it's one of those things, and I guess I can get into this right now, but it's one of those things, and I've complained numerous times here, but this is a sort of all of the above kind of complaint episode. Okay, so maybe you'd buy tickets to see me, but you missed me the 3 times I was in your city. So do you check my website? Do you do anything but watch the clips that come across your screen randomly? Did you sign up for my newsletter? You know, on my website where it's like, find out about big things, sign here once a month. No. So you've done, it's one of those things where you just say, I get it. I'm in a new world. But like you should, a fan should get the respect they give, in my opinion. Mm. I put out a metric ton of free work. If what I do does not interest you enough to do what used to be not even the bare minimum for a fan, then I don't, at this point, it's sort of like, I can't do this dance anymore. I can't keep hoping that people learn to be fans. You know, just get your sex robot,
right?
Get your DoorDash, get your feeding tube, take your testosterone pill and just sit in your chair and just let it wash over you. And let's not pretend like I need to have a psychological break in terms of how I think of fans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult because I worked so hard to get to this point. Like, it's been a very erratic but somewhat steady climb. clawing my way to making more content than I want to. Not stuff I'm not proud of, but just I don't want to be a DoorDash for comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't. I am like I look how I look, but my comedy career is a musky smelling African immigrant biking all day, delivering videos, and then taking the final New Jersey transit like out into the boonies.
Yeah.
With my bike blocking the pathway of 15 people.
Yeah.
That's what my comment, and it's very weird to be at that position to feel like I'm always like, here you go. Because there is no return. There is no relationship being built. There is no kind of loyalty. This is, of course, and you always, I always have to give this caveat. Not everybody. Mm-hmm. Like if you've bought tickets, if you've seen me, if you're a Patreon subscriber, if you've bought an album, if you've done so many things, I'm obviously not talking about you.
Right.
And I hate that I have to make that distinction.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the fact that I have a fan base in numbers that should make me a millionaire.
Yeah.
Like this fan base 10 years ago, I'm.
It should make you a millionaire and my rate should be going way up.
Yeah. And Frankie should have a brother.
Yeah.
a whole pack.
How cute is he though with his head on the table like this? Come on.
He's very cute. But so that's just one thing that was bothering me, mm-hmm. I guess, because I'm going through my usual, as I've told fans, I'm going through my usual, oh shit, I have a big show tomorrow. And I've been working this material. This is the material I'm going to film in Toronto in December. It's coming together very nicely. But it's not all there yet, but I see, you know what I mean? Like I have enough experience doing this that I see where it's coming. So I'm as always, I'm optimistic about the work.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not optimistic about ticket sales tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I saw Gianmarco. They were like, popular demand. 8 show that he's adding one more. He's adding a ninth show.
Yeah.
And I was like, am I not 1/9? I feel like my fan base is literally like 1/9 the size of his.
Right.
It's like, give me one sold out. Give me one show that just gets me back next year.
Yeah.
Because I'm at the point now where I have sold so poorly at so many venues. Like, and I don't think I was delusional. I just missed the bubble or something. It was like a reverse bubble. It was like a bubble that didn't pop for the people selling out stadiums, mm-hmm. but it popped for the guy trying to sell 200 tickets in Chicago.
Yeah.
It popped for me. They're like, well, you think you can sell out a small room on a Friday in Chicago right. with only 200,000 followers on social media?
Yeah.
Right. So it's like recalibrating how my expectations, and I have to recalibrate them to a point where I say, it's not worth it.
Mm.
It's not worth it to do stand up on the road, to do live shows. And there are fewer and fewer gigs. And like these East Coast gigs are very important to me because these are the ones I can keep while keeping a regular day job. But it just seems tomorrow I'm very prepared. There's a difference between like, please let it just not be like I go to shows now going, I don't want to be embarrassed with my turnout. That's a horrible way to go to work.
Yeah.
And when you really deeply care about your work, it's soul crushing, especially when you go, but I should be selling okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be Gianmarco. I'm not. I don't have that following. I am not as adept and sort of mastered the various media, and I don't have representation. But
it never helps. I mean,
yeah.
Having representation can go a long way.
Your representation matters is what I'm saying. But not in a DEI way, certainly not that way. But, you know, like, and I give you the example in 2018 when I was, you know, just, I had featured at Helium, you know, a handful of times. Mm. And, I went on a Wednesday in the summer, which is not a great time. That's where they give you the headline. This is before like TikTok. So they were just like, you're good as a tip. We'll give you a headlining night. So I sold like 70 tickets and they comped 30. And it was a good show. I recorded an album that night, Thoughts and Prayers. And it was really good. And I was very proud just to have had like a respectable crowd as nothing more than a feature and a guy who'd been on Corolla for a few years, but not in a couple of years since then. Then I go to Philadelphia last year different club, but the other big club, Punchline, where I am as of this recording tomorrow night, I sold 45 tickets. Now, in between those 70 tickets and those 45 tickets, because it was the same month, it was the same day of the week, same month, mid-August, I had gained approximately 200,000 followers, approximately 40 million views on social media. I'd had a special on Amazon. I'd been on Billions. All these things happened post that show. And I sold 33% fewer tickets. That's not even a kick in the balls. That's something entirely different than that. And you sort of have to go like, oh, wow. I can't to this day explain it. Like, I multiplied my fan base by 50 times and have seen a 33% reduction in ticket sales. It just doesn't make sense. So going through this ritual gig after gig is becoming like damaging to me. Because I still care and I still have hope for like the comedy, but I don't have any hope for my career. And it's a weird dance that I'm doing with my like mental health for comedy. So I've been talking about running for office for like a year, maybe, or percolated as like a, wait, maybe I should do this. So I had a very fruitful and serious discussion with a guy in DC who is he was like a fan, and he's a guy who saw me featuring for like Dave Attell. Like there are a group of fans in this country that saw me crush as like a feature in 2010 or 2013 and stayed fans and social media followers and supporters. And so this guy has become kind of like, you know, made that transition from friend to friend. Mm-hmm. Fran being friend fan. Mm-hmm. And we had a very good Zoom conversation with him and like his partner, I guess, in business. And they broke it down for me very seriously. First was the money that would need to be raised, which was daunting. Mm-hmm. But not really as big a concern to me because, I mean, it's a concern. But it's not a concern like, oh, this is going to psychologically damage me if I don't raise $3 million. I'll just be like, well, that's fucking like almost impossible.
Right.
So it wouldn't be like they hate me.
Right.
No, when somebody doesn't buy my album for $4.99, I think maybe they hate me.
Right.
But when I can't raise $3 million. Now, the irony of ironies would be if it was like, hey, turns out, Mike, I'm a fundraising wizard.
Yeah, right.
People can't wait to throw money at me, just not for comedy.
Right, right.
I don't know if that would be the worst feeling in the world, but it'd be close.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, so what? You'll give me $1,000, but you won't buy a ticket?
Yeah, right.
What the fuck?
Right.
Like the woman.
This thing was $7.
Right. I got booked in D.C. for a private gig, as you know who, in November. And I gave the person, you know, a nice, not a discount, I would say, but just a very fair rate based on what I get. And I did a thing when I had my shows in D.C., I said, just want to check. Is the person who booked me for a private gig here? First show, no. Second show, no. They go, okay, you'll pay me 100 times what the ticket costs?
Yeah.
But you're not, okay, well, hey, whatever you want to do, ma'am. But he told me the money, and the money, I was like, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. That's very daunting. He did, you know, in terms of complimentary things, say, you know, I've talked to some people. Kind of pitched your hypothetically candidate X. If he's A, B, C, D, he's doing D, he's doing C. I said C twice, not a good start. But they said he's got that's a great story. That's a great kind of like, in the abstract, that's a very compelling, interesting shakeup, not shakeup candidate, but whatever the, you know, like non-conventional candidate with who could make some waves.
Non-establishment.
Non-establishment, but I'm forgetting the word. It's not change candidate, but a whatever, not disruptor, that's tech bros. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yes.
So that was the positive, but then, and the money was like one of the big things where I was like, well, okay. I mean, I knew it'd be a lot, but where I live is basically a New York market.
Right.
So they were like, if you lived in Kansas, you know, you might have your pathway might be a lot monetarily easier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we get to the two big things that caused me pause, that gave me pause.
Pause?
Yeah. There you go, Frankie. Good job. The first was, you know, if I got in and had any backing and was raising any money, it's full time. Running is full time.
Yeah, of course it is.
I know you say that.
That's why congressmen don't go to work when they're doing it.
Well, that's and that, you know, my comedy career is very instructive. Like I've told people this before, but my basketball career is why I think I'm still doing comedy, because I quit my high school team when I was a junior. As a sophomore, I quit JV as a sophomore. I thought I should have been playing varsity. I was like a wise ass 16-year-old. I should have been benched. I was you know, a dick. But then junior year, when I came back, they cut me. I would have started on varsity. They cut me. Mm. Very humiliating. I've talked about it on one of my specials, playing literally co-ed basketball, like as the best basketball player in the school, like in gym. Mm. It was humiliating. Come back senior year, yada, yada, yada. Coach makes life very difficult and says some very disrespectful things to me about members of my family. Mm. Not maybe in the way you think, but just it was the kind of thing where I was like, but I want to play in college, so I guess I have to eat this shit. Mm-hmm. Now, adult me is like, you're not even going to have that much fun playing college basketball. Mm-hmm. Tell this motherfucker to suck your dick.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? And then when they bring you in front of like the principal or whoever, you tell him what he said.
Yeah.
That he's telling you your uncle has no class, and that like he's trying to coach me during the game. Shut up, you paranoid old fuck.
Yeah.
That's what I would have done, adult me, because I was like, you're not going to enjoy college basketball. You're going to grind away at college basketball for some sort of like, but when you quit, it was like almost one of those embedded lessons. When you quit, you give power to someone else.
Right.
To control your life. If you ever want to get back in, now they pull the strings. So I stuck through college basketball, which was largely miserable for me. Okay. So I think that has like imprinted itself on me. And so comedy has made me realize that whenever I think logically, whenever I think, no, this should work. Mm-hmm. Like, how many friends have I had genuinely tell me like, oh, 15 years ago, dude, you're so good. And your story is like ready. Oh, you're a lawyer. You're a comic. Your dad's Haitian. Your mom's Irish. Like, but biracial people are getting shit left and right. It's such a, you tell it so well. The club's told you to do more autobiographical stuff if you want to get passed. Now you're crushing it with autobiographical stuff, but nobody's passing you at the clubs. They're giving you guest spots at best. Okay. Even after I got a late night spot and thought this should at least get me in like some late night spots, nothing. So I just kept pursuing comedy, much to my own frustration, from a point of logic.
Got to stay in.
Well, if I'm really good,
right,
and I have late night credits and I have a huge following now, it'll all come together.
Right.
And it's kind of all unraveled. I got everything I thought I needed, and both the industry and my own fans have not fulfilled what felt like it was supposed to be their end of the bargain. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have to be very wary when I think of politics in the same terms of like, no. My overarching theme, if I don't quit my job, isn't that what we really want? Don't we want people who, it's like, I'm a grinder. I'm on grinder for, you know, that's if I was a Republican. But it is, it's like, in theory, I'm going, get up at 4, work out, go help people stave off eviction.
Yeah.
Poor people stave off eviction, do a show or come to a town hall or a meeting or an event. Look at this guy. He's not becoming a full-time politician. I don't like politicians.
Yeah.
This guy's real. He's doing real work. He doesn't want to leave his job because in the likely event he doesn't get elected, he wants to keep helping these people. Mm-hmm. Even though the job is stressing the shit out of him, mm-hmm. he wants to keep doing it because he believes in it, mm-hmm. and doesn't believe ambition alone is a reason to abandon those people. But I, of course, understand the realpolitik of no, but that's wonderful that you think that. And everybody says, this is me talking, not my friend, mm-hmm. but everybody says, no, I don't like politics. Yeah, but who do you elect? You elect politicians.
Yeah.
You know, except for Trump. But Trump is a celebrity and an influence at a level, you know, a Taylor Swift. It's like if Taylor Swift ran for president, basically. We're talking that kind of pull on the media. But I'm feeding myself into believing like, but what if I don't quit the job? What if I really do run as like, I'm not a professional politician. You want to think if somebody hears this, they'll go, okay, I'll go to his event at 8 o'clock in my town at the local elementary school. I want to hear this guy. Seems like a fun guy. Seems like he's got some ideas. Seems unconventional, but seems sort of sharp. I'll go see him. That's the dream. That I don't. If it's sleep I have to give up, it's sleep. You can't complain about that when you're a Navy SEAL or a politician or a nurse or a doctor.
A Navy SEAL? How did Navy SEAL get?
They have to stay up for like 7 days in a row.
Oh, no, I get that.
I'm using that as like there are certain jobs where it's like I'm a little tired.
Oh yeah, I get you. Yeah.
Nobody's gonna be like, oh, you're a politician. Oh, you're being serving the people is exhausting you. I guess I'll vote for somebody who seems inexhaustible.
Right.
So sleep is something I can give up.
Yes.
I can give up the 3 hours of bad sleep I'm getting a night. No. But I am already talking myself into going, but what if I'm so unconventional? Because this isn't a job at a big firm where I'm like, I don't want to lose my huge money. This is like, I don't want to leave this job.
Yeah.
I would leave the job to be in Congress because they would be okay with that too. They're like, oh, we have a friend. We have a direct line and a friend in Congress who cares about the funding of agencies that help people stave off eviction. No, don't go.
Yeah.
No, of course.
Yeah.
So that's one part. That's one part because leaving a job I just kind of started that I am sort of committed to for ambition feels wrong. Leaving it for the job feels way less wrong. Okay, that's one. Then the big one. The scrubbing my social media and my comedy. And that is the one I've really been wrestling with, oddly enough, because I understood completely. And if somebody, if a publicist, a PR company, if I wrote them a huge check and they said, okay, we found 5 million problematic things. If I looked at each tweet, is there something from 2019? Is there something from 2010 that I go, oh yeah, delete that. It means nothing to me. It's okay, I was mad, or oh, that was more in vogue. And that's the thing, you won't see like bigotry. You won't see, but you might hear some jokes that are certainly crude.
Mm-hmm.
And I can even think of a couple of jokes that I go, I don't like that joke. I'm annoyed that I told that joke.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
As years go by, forget it.
Very few, yeah. Mike. Very few. I stand by almost all of my work.
To your point, that times do change, and then you look back at some stuff and you go, I regret saying that. You mature, whatever. Right. You know.
So when you factor all that in, I then started getting very, I don't say emotional, but whatever the word for getting retrospective about something, introspective or I don't know. I'm at a loss for the word. Introspective, I guess. But it was, I was like, I don't have kids. And I don't think my comedy is going to be the legacy I thought it would be. But it still is. It still is my adult life. It still is the thing I'm best at. It's the thing I'm most proud of, kind of, in my life. Which is the double-edged sword. You know, pride cometh before the fall. My entire career is like not wanting to sell out, not wanting to do any, and just having pride in I've done comedy the right way. And there is no reward for doing it the right way, except at this point, your own personal integrity. Mm-hmm. It's some people get to do it the right way and they make a ton of money. Some people do it shamelessly and make a ton of money, and other people do it the right or wrong way and make no money.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept thinking about, like, if somebody were to go through my material and they said, hey, get rid of this joke, I'd be like, sure. Just because it's like, oh, that's like, that isn't central to who I am as a person, as an artist, whatever. But I feel like there are some things that would be problematic that I would be like, no, I am willing to have this fight.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the president of the United States says worse things as president than I've ever said as a comedian, and then I'm going to have to pay the price. And I thought about this. If I were famous, really famous, not famous for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
If I were really famous, just like how Trump's corruption is out in the open and people don't act like it's corruption.
Right.
They're like, oh, he's, no, but he raped that woman and bribed that official. We all saw it.
Right.
can't be too bad. He's just doing it right there. We all saw it.
Right.
But if you had a secret tape of it, that's why the Epstein tapes are so problematic, because it's the first time, like, there might be secret things. Ooh, we'll finally know if Trump's a bad guy.
Well, yeah.
Right? Right. It's this psychological trick of like, well, if it's open, then it's fine.
Yeah.
Or it's not as bad. And if it's hidden, you hide. I actually got a B- on a test, but I put a extra line to make it look like a B+. Disqualified.
Yeah.
Disqualified. You know, meanwhile, Trump, you know, is like, I grabbed it by the pussy. And it's like, well, he said, you know, he's having a conversation. It can't be too bad. He's saying it in public.
That guy's talking a lot.
He's either a shameless sociopath or it's not so bad.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to say it's not so bad. But the, like, there is part of me that's like, I would have that fight. I would be willing to have that fight and argue of, I am proud of the journey I've taken. I think it's been in some ways foolish because it has been rough on me psychologically and for many years rough financially. Mm-hmm. But that only makes me more proud of it, of the perseverance, of all the traits that we, once again, say we want.
Yes.
Look at this guy. He's taking greyhounds at midnight. He's hustling. He's working a day job. He's doing this. He's doing that. This guy has a lot more grit than the average politician. Because he's been doing what he has to, and then burning the candle at both ends to try to make a dream come true. And I say, so it all makes sense. Why don't quit the job? Let the people see. Like, you show up at 8, yeah, you've been up since 6 a.m., you're there at 8 p.m. for 3 hours, talking, meeting. On the weekends, you're knocking on doors, you're meeting people, you're going to events, you're... And on the comedy front, they'll understand. They'll get it. They'll be like, you know, we don't want to. The right forgives the worst behavior in real life. Mm-hmm. So the left has to get the message at some point that, like, hey, sometimes a guy, you know, Quentin Tarantino is not being canceled for dropping N-bombs in his scripts. They somehow understand art.
Yeah.
But when a comedian does anything, it's like, this person is morally failed. Well, unlike Andrew Schultz or whoever, I didn't vote for Trump. I've never crossed any sort of really bad line in my personal life. Most people, I think, would find me, if not deeply irritating, ethical and moral.
Are you looking for confirmation?
No, that's a fact, brother. Yeah. That's a fact. You're like, I agree on all three. Annoying, ethical, and moral. That's my campaign slogan. But at the same time, it's like, my point in bringing all this up and why comedy was such a, and I haven't decided what I'm going to do yet, because I feel like I have been given very good counsel, and I hope, I'm not naming who it was, but I hope I know he listens to the show. I hope he appreciates this and understands that I'm just sharing my thought process on this, because it was a very generous conversation. I felt like they were honest with kid gloves. But I could read between the lines and see that there are things I bring to the table and there are a lot of things I don't bring to the table. And a couple of, if not red flags, what could be used as negatives. And now this is my dilemma. Am I going to learn? And this is a different episode. You, no clips, Mike. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, buddy. No clips. Because this is like a very special episode of Rain on Your Parade. But it's sometimes fans actually like these deep dives. Mm-hmm. But I am at a crossroads of, do I believe in myself again? That's what this is.
In the political arena?
Yes. Do I
yes,
trust?
Of course. No, what
no,
do you mean?
No. Because I trusted myself in comedy for 2 decades.
Yeah,
I know. I also stuck with, I'm just saying, the lessons of my life have been, if you do things the right way, if you bust your ass, you'll get really good and nothing will work out. I'm oversimplifying it, but I'm just saying there has to be a give and take. People who know this, I have to take their counsel under consideration.
I think that's the big difference between that and comedy, though. Because comedy, I think.
Oh, you mean they're not in they're not trying to ruin my life and take things from me if they're offering me advice, unlike comedy?
No, I mean, I think knowing you as well as I do at this point, I do think I know you quite well. I think we're pretty close. Fair to say?
I think that's more by process of elimination. I'm basically fucking Doc Holliday from Tombstone.
Meaning that you're my only friend, or I'm your only friend?
No, no, I'm Doc Holliday. I'll sign up for your open mic.
I got a lot of friends. I don't.
Yeah, everybody loves that guy in the movie. Yeah. In real life, they're like, get away from JL Holliday. He's a prick.
No, but I do think if I were to be bluntly honest about one of the roadblocks that I think might have existed in part of your comedy career is that you are a control freak in a lot of ways. Like, you think your way is the right way. And I think that works for your craft, because I think obviously it's like your way is the right way when you figure out an impression, when you write your jokes, when you actually do the work.
Right.
But it might not always be the right way when it comes to like navigating the stuff that's not as fun. The stuff that like somebody that like I know for a fact, somebody like Gianmarco, who we've talked about before, is much better at.
This episode. Yeah. I love how you're like talking about him like way back when 15 minutes ago.
25 minutes ago. I mean, like, and again, I'm not saying that because like I think Gianmarco is a perfect example of a guy that like mixed it. He is talented, but he's also like, he is nice to a lot of, or was at least when I knew him, super nice to people, but also kind of like sort of plays the game the right way.
Right.
And I think if you were to move into this new arena, like, you don't know any better. You would kind of have to rely on some of the guidance from somebody else where, like, if your skill set's going to be talking to people, like, being the candidate, then I do think that it might behoove you to be in a position where you would have to take some advice from some of these people that are like, if you listen to us, we can help you get here. If you listen
it's
to
like
us,
how people
help.
Love
kind of like
podcast.
Having a manager.
Well, it's like how people loved the podcast when you came on board.
Right, right. So I think that putting yourself into arenas where you like, I don't think anybody that listens to this show or knows you in real life, like,
people
I don't
listen to this show.
I don't think there's a few. I don't think anybody doubts your ability to do a lot of things. You know, like, you're a super smart guy, like a really, really smart guy, capable guy. I think that I would think if you polled some of the people in your life, maybe they would say there's an element of like self-destruction here, and not in a way that it's like JL is on heroin again and we got to get him off it. But there's a little bit of like he won't listen. JL won't listen to us. So when you're in arenas where you're like, all right, maybe I don't know what I'm doing is what, like with this was, that is a good example where it was like, when you opened up to letting me give you some advice on like, try to structure it like this, try to do this. I feel like you did understand like, oh, now I got it.
Right.
I got it. And your ability
and then you
to do this improved. No,
so
I mean,
what was the lesson there?
No. But I do think that like
I've abandoned my podcaster.
I've abandoned my boy. I do think that could be a good thing for you.
Just give me the downloads, Michael.
You clearly know the law. You clearly like you're in, but enough where yeah. More than Trump. Well, maybe right. Not more than Trump because he's gotten away with a lot.
Excuse me. we're doing very strange things in terms of amendment.
But this isn't you going and being like, I'm going to stop doing comedy and I'm going to go. I'm going to become a chef, which was my backup plan.
Oh,
was to go to culinary school. I think that you're putting yourself in a position where like you can be successful and you're going to have to listen to other people. You don't have a choice. That might be really good for you to be coached in a way that puts you on a track, you know? And the other thing is like constant, in my opinion, rip off the Band-Aid, delete all this fucking shit from the internet, delete everything. I think you got to get to a point where you're trying to figure out like,
I care.
I know you do, but consider like,
I just need to interrupt
go
one
ahead,
time. Okay. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
We talked about Chapel Roan. Ronnie was the first to Graham Chapman Run. And then I bought that album like probably 6 months before her Grammys performance, where everybody like lost their mind over Pink Pony Club. I referred to the Happy Stripper song.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a good ass song. And that album, I used to always buy hard copy and I'd upload it to, you know, now nobody's making CDs anymore. Yeah. But I like to have, I have a huge DVD, a Blu-ray case because I like to have it. Because I feel like these companies can't be trusted.
Yeah.
So one morning after listening to Pink Pony Club for probably 1,000 times, I'm playing the album, which has other good songs, and Pink Pony Club's just disappeared. And I'm like, what? And then I go to like the album, and it's like, it says it's purchased, and it's like download, and it's like it won't let me listen to it anymore. So somebody either from private equity or in Chapel Roan's corporate team packaged the rights to that song, I guess, because it was such a hit. And now I don't, I bought it, and now I don't have it. And I was just like, what in the fuck is this?
Right.
This is I paid for that. Yeah. Where is it?
Right.
And the idea of, you know, that's how I got upset over that.
Of course.
I still haven't
rebought. Well, you have a right to do.
I still haven't rebought the song.
Right.
Out of principle. Right. That nobody cares about.
Right. right.
But. The idea of deleting my comedy, it's like, this will sound very highfalutin or whatever, and I hate, but I get this way about a few things in my comedy career, maybe out of necessity, maybe out of just
survival.
Well, no, but like, the way I feel about it is more like, I feel like my friends have disrespected my comedy. The industry has disrespected my comedy. My own fans, in some respects, have disrespected my comedy. I will not abandon my comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds like, but this has been my adult life's work.
Sure.
Like, and I'm good and I'm proud of it. And I'm even proud of shitty jokes if they show an arc of development, improvement, a pathway. Like, you can hear my life through my comedy. You can hear my life literally, and you can hear my life growing, maturing, and my skills as a comedian growing and maturing. And I'm always asking the question, like, what am I doing this for? That's going forward. But my reasons for having done what I have done are very real and very meaningful to me. And it's the idea of, like, I don't know if there's something worth giving that up for.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to give that up, I don't know if I could. I would rather, I mean, and no political manager would want to hear this. Like, I'd rather lose than win that way. It's like, next.
Yeah, right.
Next. Get the fuck out of my office. This isn't fucking Braveheart.
Yeah, yeah.
It's politics.
Right.
Nobody's going to be like, deleting your fucking albums off iTunes while you scream freedom.
Right.
And so, but that is a real dilemma for me, because of course I've rationalized a way where I could spin my comedy career as an asset.
Yeah.
Both the things I say, my approach to it, my defense of it. So, and now I'm sorry, that was a very long tirade, but you were telling me how I should listen to more people.
I think
you wanted me to delete. You were like, get rid of it all.
I can just, you know, you have done stand up for much longer than I had only done stand up for about 5.5 years. There wasn't I had my Twitter and I had my stuff on Instagram, but even like walking away from Guys Be Fucked, and like, to me, I have gotten good at walking away from things when I just kind of feel like, for me, it doesn't really work anymore. And I feel like since we've been doing this podcast, that's how I've been hearing you talk.
Right.
That it's like, this is a thing that doesn't really work for me anymore. And I think that, like, it's gut-wrenching to sort of, like, pull the Band-Aid off for some of that stuff, because it's so much of your identity. And everything that you said is completely valid. Like, you track your growth as an adult and your maturity and blah, blah, blah.
My,
like,
emotional support dog, Frankie, has shown up. He senses a disturbance.
But I think that that would just be, now, it doesn't mean you have to listen to me on this, but I just think that it's more, even just for, if you're not going to, like, this is the thing. I still don't know if you're serious about stopping.
The funny thing is,
why I've never been, first off, it's not my place to push you into anything,
sure.
But it's more just like, That's why in my mind, I'm kind of just like, I don't believe you're going to stop. Like, I just think that it's so ingrained that you'll just keep doing this, even if it's like tearing you up, you know?
But that's it's. A man in my position cannot be made to look foolish, ridiculous. Yeah. That's how I sort of feel, though. I've like the one thing that could get me to quit comedy is if I feel stupid doing it.
Right.
And I'm starting to feel stupid.
Like embarrassed.
Aren't you embarrassed?
Yeah, right, right.
You do comedy on the internet. Right. You don't do shows. And that's what's, I think, more than anything, this idea of like, am I an idiot?
Right.
Like, I hate to have this be like a, like insecurity, but it's like, am I wasting my time now? Am I throwing good after bad? And are people watching me do this? And
right.
Like, I could be doing my job and then going to the gym and just getting myself healthy.
Yep.
And feeling good about what I'm doing. Because, and I can't do that just yet. I keep emailing for gigs, but it's like each month goes by with comedy and you realize it's only get like, I have accumulated more and more Instagram followers. I now have like a pretty decent Instagram and Facebook following. I got like 110K between the two of them, but that's after only like 4 months of really investing in these accounts.
Yeah.
And people love the stuff, but you're just like, I have a job. I never wanted comedy to be my job. I wanted to get paid for it. I wanted to be my work, my source of income, my motivation, but a job meaning a task, you know, unless I was writing for something, and that would be in service to broadening my name within comedy to give me more opportunities to mm-hmm. do what I want. But beyond that, comedy feeling like I said, like DoorDash, like where I'm like, oh, Trump did something, or RFK fell down the stairs, or
well, right.
That's not a way. Yeah. That's like an embarrassment. And I know everybody. Maybe my old fashionedness will actually help me get out of it one day. Where I'm like, when I tell people whether it's how much I've made on Cameo or how much I made a few years on YouTube, certain years, and I'm like, yeah, but I still wish I was like going to a studio to do these things, like work feeling like work or a job feel, not. Yeah, I just went in my office and made $7,000 this week doing fucking ridiculous things.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, it feels childish, you know, and is that where we're headed, I guess?
That's where we're at. I pretty much work from home.
No, but I'm not talking about work. I'm talking about like.
No, but I'm in a field. I produce podcasts.
But you're, like
I would have never thought before 2020 that I would be able to do this not in a studio with somebody.
Right.
But, you know, that was how I broke into the business. I used to not be able to get up to go to the bathroom when I was doing radio shows because I didn't have time.
Right.
I was on the board, a live mixing board. And now I produce full shows, video, like from home for the most part. And I mean, I do think as the technology changes and the way audiences interact with comedians and content, a word that we hate, but like I think as that stuff starts to change, it does really, it's going to get more frustrating if people expect to sell tickets, I think, unless there are the few, like the John Marcos or Stavros or
yeah.
a couple people like that like maybe their comedy is specifically suited to have a live audience because of their crowd work or the whatever. And I don't have socials anymore, so who knows? But I think that it's like it's a perfect storm of a lot of things, and when it, you know, I do think when it's time to move on from stuff, it gets very hard when your identity is wrapped up into something, you know, and that's a big part. Like you were saying, it's what's wrong with being like a normal person,
right?
And I think that that's like a hard thing when. This is such an ego-driven thing that...
Unlike politics.
You know, well, right, but...
And that's another thing, just while we're being completely upfront. I have done soul-searching on this, and I haven't even still told my brother, who I know is going to be like the... my brother, I'm the big guy. I'm basically the Sonny of the family, except when it comes to my brother. Then all of a sudden, I become Connie at the beginning of Godfather 2, asking Michael for permission to get married. I have really thought, on the plus side, I go, well, I'm interested, I'm passionate about politics, I have a skill set, I have, if nothing else, I have developed parallel skill sets that could be of use in politics, mm-hmm. between the communication, the humor, and also kind of sporadically doing like substantive legal work, going to law school, that creates a sort of unique package that I think 30 years ago was not as compelling as it is in 2025.
Yeah.
But I do think and go, am I doing this because I feel like comedy's done and I'm just looking for the next thing, like something else that can kind of satiate or satisfy a sort of like, you know, or am I doing this because I want to be of service and I think I have, and I'm looking where can my skills be best applied? And I've fallen on the side of, I think it's where my skills can best be applied and I actually give a shit.
But why, it can be all of those things.
No, because I feel like, hello, Frankie. I feel like if you get into it, you know, that kind of job corrupts a lot of people.
Yeah, but JL, this is so Catholic the way you're looking at this, that there has to be an ultimate purity to the fact. Like, the truth is, it probably is some mix of all of those things, and it might be more that you give a shit and you want to be of service. There might be a little bit of ego involved. Like, I think politics, if you want to be the person that like is responsible for making the change, I mean, you can't not have some. That's got to be in there somewhere. It doesn't mean you're a runaway train, egotistical, like delusional sociopath.
Fast forward 6 years from now.
But you know what I mean? Like you can, I'm not saying, I think a healthy amount of ego, but personally, sure. is like a good, it's a good thing. It's not always bad.
For me, the test I gave myself is, I said, as much as I care about comedy, I feel like I've never sold out.
Yeah.
For whatever benefit or most likely harm it's done to my comedy career, I feel like, if I didn't sell out for comedy, if I just kept doing it, either I'll quit or eventually I'll break through. And then when I did break through, I couldn't stay there. I never felt like I did anything that I wasn't like, no, I'm good. Like, yeah. I'm still doing it my way, right. Good or bad.
Right.
What I believe is the right process, I'm doing it. If I didn't sell out for comedy, then the thing that gives me comfort in thinking about pursuing this is that I wouldn't sell out for this. Yeah. And that is like, that at the end of the day is why I'm like, if I decide to do it and I have like a couple of weeks really, it's that I know I won't violate my own principles. I'll just get voted out or quit.
It's great.
If it becomes, you know.
But this is also what you're about to embark on is a more principled endeavor in theory than comedy is. Like, you hold your principles very closely.
But comedians are the only truth tellers out there, my say people on social media, who will immediately turn on me the first time they hear a joke they don't like.
Well, they are fucking idiots.
Hey, those are my voters you're talking about.
No. You're right. I'm so sorry. I retract that statement.
PR people, you can cut this clip out because that will be taken out of context. Here he is laughing at his own voters. I'm getting into a John Fugelsang tone of voice.
But I think that, like, yeah, I think that conflating the two is not fair, because I do think that it's, I mean, that's great that you're not going to, that you, I believe that you would, if you were to take going to politics,
which, and by the way, my principles are unlimited APAC money.
Right. But what would have been selling
that
out?
That didn't get a laugh.
I'm on a roll here. What would have been, because we're diving deep. This is like a therapy session.
Oh, he gave me the Cornel West finger, saying,
Brother JL.
Let's go deeper. When I see a guy like Brother JL who will not compromise his principles, I say this is a person I can back, like Brother Bernie, Sister AOC. Now we have JLC.
But what would have been selling out for stand up? Like, knowing now that the, like, where we're at with everything, and
choosing for, I mean, one example, honestly, choosing friends for, like, I always look at it and I go, is it a coincidence that click that people formed cliques and the whole clique, like, I chose friends. Most of my friends in comedy quit comedy.
Right.
And I say, right, because they had other shit.
Right.
They had other interests. They had other lives. They were, and this isn't to say there aren't hardcore comedians that I don't like and like talking to and stuff. I'm just saying the people you really became friends with were largely people who like quit comedy eventually. Like they liked doing it, but then they were just like, well, it's, you know, I'm the sucker in like some of my friend groups that's like, Dale's still fucking at it. Yeah. And they've seen success. They're not like, he's still at it. What a loser. But they see me grinding still. And I think there's part of them that admire it. And part of them that are like, thank God that's not me.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to be for people. I want them to both go, God, I'm glad he's doing that. Because I sure would hate to. But I interrupted you again, I think.
No, I just think that that's the thing. It's like there's whatever I think you could have seen as
Jimmy Fallon. I'm sorry. Jimmy Fallon is a perfect example.
Okay. He's Fox
a guy.
Show.
Yeah, he's a guy. He was always very kind to me. I remember he invited me to a party one night. And who knows if that party would have changed my life. But he was like, there's going to be some big wigs there. I think he might have just started getting involved in Fox or not. Mm-hmm. But he didn't mention who they were or what they. But this is like. This is 12 years ago. And I had been on his radio show a little bit. And I could never really tell his politics. He's a Long Island guy, wisecracking guy, but very funny, very, very, very supportive. Very
also 12 years ago, everybody's politics was different. Like,
but,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, Trump changed the game, obviously. But, like, I always found him very funny and very nice to me. And I'm sure if I ran into him today, it's not like he'd be like, you fucking hate Trump. Fuck you. I'm sure he'd be like, JL, what's up, buddy?
Yeah, yeah.
And I would jump right back into it. But he invited me to this party. And I remember I was going on a first date with a woman who I'd end up dating for a couple of years. And I was like, do you mind if we just, and then I got like the biggest, like I liked the person, like I'd known the person for, but I got this biggest like shit storm. I was like, I'm just, we'll go. Like, fuck it. Fuck that party.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe I'd be on Fox News right now. Like instead of Jesse Waters, I'd be like a millionaire just going, Democrats hate America. but he's a guy where I've seen when I talk about it's selling out, I don't think is a, and I use this. I said all that I said about him because I'm not trying to completely insult him, but like you've seen a lot of the right wing, a lot of comics who you didn't know their politics or whatever, all of a sudden have become culture warriors because there's a lot of money there. Jimmy kind of went slowly but surely, it felt, into that. And if those are his politics and you're not selling out, if those were his politics, he's not selling out.
Right.
Whether I may not like them, but that's not selling out. Selling out is me becoming MAGA.
Right.
Or me, you know, I've seen headliners, big headliners who bring dog shit openers. That's selling out to me.
Yeah.
Like, if they're not your best friend, if they're just some guy that you like the idea of like, yeah, he's like, he's this or he does this and that'll help me. That is a form of sellout to me. But when I saw Fail on like a Sean Hannity show and he just did a couple of jokes and I was like, that's selling out. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, those were bad jokes and you know it. Mm-hmm. Not even that they were offensive. I was like, that's cheesy shit. Come on, man. I get it if you're writing for somebody, but you're a personality there now. You got to have some say in like, and I just said it was a one-time incident where I saw him and I was like, you're better. You're a better comedian than that. Mm-hmm. That's where I say, if you're a Republican and you're supporting Republicans, I don't have to like it, but you're not selling out. But if you tell shittier jokes, that's a step in the wrong direction. Interrupt you again, please.
No, I guess that, you know, that was sort of my thing. I think that it's like all of this to say that I think that there is a lot more morality tied to selling out in public service than there is in selling out in comedy. And I think that public service would be a good place to be hard on yourself about blurring those lines, whereas like comedy is a really fucking dumb party industry where it is half of what the success is based on is like networking.
Senator, I never attended a single skank fest.
Yes, right, exactly. I was in two of them. that's exactly right. That's kind of my point. Where I think that it might be a good pivot for you, and I know that you're thinking about it to begin with, but you know, it's good for you to have a new act. Not a new act.
No, I get you.
You know, like a second act is more that would be a good place for you to do that, I think, as opposed to, you know, culinary school. Which I keep bringing up. How are your knife skills?
Terrible. this was obviously a weirder episode, but I don't care. I, you know, hopefully some of you found it enlightening because this is really what's going on. You know, it's a lot. In a perfect world, I'd have a few years to mourn the end of my comedy career, a few years to maybe get my feet wet and then go. But it seems like there's a little bit of a perfect storm or an imperfect storm happening. But, you know, the two toughest things, the fundraising. If I suck at it, okay, I suck at fundraising. If I'm great at it, I'll actually
get yourself a career, baby.
I'll actually feel sadder about that. But the two big things to me were, and like I said, rationalizing like the perfect approach for me. Oh, and that just happens to be the way I think that will win. Mm-hmm. Even though most people be like, that will lose horribly.
Yeah.
The idea of keeping your job. But I'm like, the catch 22 of this all is, if I keep my job helping people not get evicted, that's the guy I want to sell you on, not the guy who leaves that job for a chance. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a catch 22 where it's like, did you leave that you left? You ditched your job? You abandoned your child?
I abandoned my boy.
Just give me the seat in Congress, Eli. That's... I know it's a convenient rationalization because it allows me to not leave the job, you know, but that's also kind of what I hope people would take. Like, oh yeah, this guy's, he's up 20 hours a day,
yeah.
But he cares.
He just won't stop.
He cares about this issue that he took this job and doesn't believe in abandoning it for a roll of the dice.
Right.
And, you know, and then the comedy stuff. I think I've explained that thoroughly, why that's so difficult for me.
I think we've covered it.
Thank you. So I had a show in New York this weekend, and only my cousin showed up with two of her cousins, not related to me, like her other. But I was like, I did ask the crowd. I couldn't help myself. I was like, anybody here a fan of mine? Anybody here by like my hometown, biggest city in America? Goose egg. Yeah. Just my cousin. And that's all we have at the end of the day, folks.
Cousins.
Family.
Yeah.
That's all we can. Whatever Uncle Tuco says in Breaking Bad.
Family is everything.
Bam, bam, bam. No announcements. I'll do announcements next week. You know, you ignore. Just have a great weekend or week whenever you listen to this. I'll see you next Thursday.